When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When it was easy to ride,
singing way, hey, ho.
But the years haven't withered my joy and my pride,
singing way, hey, ho.
I've never been much for the pistol or blade,
singing way, hey, ho.
For the sun is my course and the sky is my trade,
singing way, hey, ho.
My mother, she told me that life would be fine if you're free with the water but savor the wine, and to never be hurried but always on time,
singing way, hey, ho, singing way, hey, ho.
All right, heroes, welcome to some bonus content. I am James D'Amato. I am the host of the Campaign Skyjacks podcast, amongst other things. I am here with Drew Merzieski. Drew, do you want to introduce yourself?
Of course. Hi, everybody. I'm Drew. I'm the host and narrator of Skyjacks, Courier's Call.
And, of course, we are also joined by Aaron Catano-Saez. Aaron.
Hello. I play Cecilia Witwick on Skyjack's Courier's Call.
And I'll also point out that both Drew and Aaron have other podcasts why not? Let's plug in the bonus content. We're here to support Courier's Call. Everybody knows about Courier's Call.
It's true.
Let's plug Knight of Threads and Patches. Let's plug All My Fantasy Children. Hit us with some plugs, Drew.
Yeah, sure, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at Worlds to Forge. And my other shows out in the world right now are A Knight of Shreds and Patches.
Ooh,
you can find that at acosap.com. That's AKOSAP.com. And you can also find me and my wife, Allie, at our Patreon, which is Patreon Whimsy Artifice.
Dope. All right. And Aaron, what about you? Where can the people find you? And
my Twitter handle is at Aaron Catano Saez, all one word. And my other show is All My Fantasy Children. It's a tabletop-inspired character creation, world-building, and storytelling podcast powered by listener-submitted prompts. And you can find that at @AMFC_podcast on Twitter.
Radical. All right. With that, we are ready to dive in. Friends, we are here today because Aaron and Drew were talking about CC, Season 2 CC, an older, more mature, more powerful version of CC. And we're talking about the possibility of getting into magic. And there are a couple things that we were going to discuss in that. I want you two to just bring everyone up to speed. What are we going to be talking about? What are we going to be exploring today?
In the very beginning, when we started planning for season two, Aaron and I sat down and we wanted to talk about, like, hey, where do we see CC going? What do we want CC to do? Like, what new things can we bring to CC? And Aaron, you were super excited to do, like, magic stuff.
Yes,
100 times yes. And so we started to talk about the magic that CC can kind of tap into. CC's already got her magic candle, and she's got her magic map to map world, and a lineage of explorers kind of going on there. I feel like we wanted to do something more. We wanted to kind of push CC kind of deeper into magic as a whole. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is that in season one, Star Watcher Winchwind kind of takes a liking to CC and brings CC on as as like apprentice Star Watcher for a little bit. I mean, everyone takes a rotation, I think, on the boat as Star Watcher, but that was something that we kind of discussed. And from that, there were lots of questions on, like, how does one deal with, how does one learn about the Lumens? How does Star Watching work that way? What, how does one build their deck of Lumens? And yeah. I'm super excited to figure all that out.
Yes.
Well, let's throw down the basic information for everyone, because there are two factors at play here. There are what we kind of touched on at the end, the luminaries, the decks of the luminaries. They are forces in the world. Some of them are like personified supernatural beings, like the Forest Queen. Some of them are, you know, like impulses or patterns of behavior, like the Butcher. Some of them are stories that repeat themselves and insist themselves upon the world, like the River, or gosh, what apart from the River? I guess and some are like concepts that are at the core of the world, like the Union. But even if these things look and feel very different from one another, they're all luminaries. They are all these things that are a big part of the world. And one of the ways that people interpret and understand them is through luminary cards, luminary decks. They resemble tarot decks. They can be used for fortune telling. They can also be used to play a game of Illimat. And the figures from these decks and whatnot, these concepts, are kind of familiar everywhere around Sphere. Like, even if you pulled up to a port that had never been visited by a skyship or any other ship, if you pulled out a luminary deck, even if they wouldn't recognize it in card form, they would recognize some of those concepts and go, oh yeah, we have words for that. We have names for that here. And you could even use that to like communicate with other people. So you've got the luminaries being sort of real forces that you can reach out to and interact with, and luminary cards, which you can tell fortunes with and use to interpret and understand your world. The other side of this is what we mentioned right up top, which is star watching. Star watching is kind of a navigational and meteorological like folk practice that is a big part of skyshipping. Basically, the 200 years ago in Sphere, stars fell from the sky, rained down on Earth, and what's left in the sky is really just a few stars, like probably a dozen or so. And they don't stay in one place. They move around a lot. The only star that stays in a fixed location that can really be relied on for orientation is the Morning Star, which is also the brightest star in the sky. Everything else, these stars move, and sailors, star watchers specifically, chart where these stars move to, use the position of those stars to help themselves orient themselves on Sphere. So it's incredibly useful for navigation. But these stars also have an intimate connection to the world of Sphere. And a really talented star watcher can use the position of those stars to determine things like what the weather is going to be, what seasons it's going to shift to in the near future. Even like a super, super talented star watcher might be able to tell how much of your crops are going to be able to yield in a given year just through the act of star watching. Star watching has a lot of different traditions to it. There are like three kind of very popular manuals or even kind of like philosophical documents on star watching that people use to like learn the trade, at least in like shipping areas. Imagine it as a combination of like real astral navigation that sailors would use and like almost like I Ching divination, a bit of farmer's almanac stuff in there. So you can use star watching to really understand your world and your position in the world. And, you know, like, for somebody who wants to sail skyships, who wants to be a captain or a navigator, or even a helms person, it's super useful to be able to learn those things. And like, there's kind of a mystical thing to it, because like the position of the stars tell you information about your world. So those are the bare bones basics. We can sort of dig in different places as we're interested, but that should give you the background you need.
Yeah. Dope.
I like it. So, Aaron, do you got any questions? You're just burning to ask?
I do, because I have a lot of ideas, and I don't know. I know what I want to do in terms of magic, because, like, I personally try to set up a character who is piquing an interest in magic and is seeing that there are people that are way beyond the very anime concept of power checking. When, like, you know, a Goku meets someone stronger than him, he wants to know how it happened. Or in Hunter Hunter, when Gon meets people who use Nen, it's like, how the heck? How can I get there? And I feel like CC is constantly surrounded by people who could potentially be or are way stronger than her at forces that she barely understands. Like, she popped off on the Forest Queen because she had no idea what the heck she was doing and, like, didn't understand the inherent risk. And I kind of want her to develop into someone who would look back and, like, facepalm, like, oh my god, I almost got turned into, like, you know, a penguin for the rest of my life and been, like, punished to, a life of damnation because I didn't understand the forces that are at play in the universe. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want her to become more understanding of the world through the forces that dictate a lot of stuff in this world. Basically a wizard. That is the definition of a wizard. And like that concept of wielding a supernatural force to choose not to do that is, like, for me, wild. The idea of there is a supernatural force that can change, is like this paracausal thing that can make the unreal real. Why not learn to have an understanding of it and use it to your advantage in this, like, world where survival is not guaranteed, you know? So that's my idea. And, like, how that manifests, I have ideas, but I don't know how they'd work because, you know, it's hard because, you know, I don't want it to be something that I don't like in tabletop games when someone has a big idea and it clashes with the overall narrative and world. So I'm trying to do this very well.
So here's the thing. You're a player in this game. We want the world to support you and the experience that you want to have. So like, there are lots of cool ways that we could do this. So let's not try to rein our let's put our ideas out there and rein them in if necessary.
That is what I'm hoping to do. Is like, so my first idea, if I can just pitch it, is so CC has this weird thing about, like, imagination. Oh, it's everything's grandiose and large, and it's very like naive child. But I thought about a world where where magic is real. There's no reason why she could not turn Excalibur, a fishing rod, into something that could, like, cut through stone, empowering things and people to provide magic. It's basically what we'd call enchantment in, like, World of Warcraft or something. Like, adding magical effects to ordinary things, or granting someone a supernatural effect. Basically, like, what a bard does, but can do it with inanimate objects. That was an idea. Ooh. And also the idea of the idea that drawing a luminary card can kind of predict the future, the mysticism involved in that, and like the feeling of if tarot were 100% accurate, where it's like, you did this. I also like to play with this idea that CC doesn't care much for luminaries who kind of, like, dictate, you know, fighting God, that old trope, and kind of wanting to figure out how to make her own or use them to her advantage. Not wield the luminaries, because that's, like, wild and, you know, that's too big, I think. But the idea of using the effects of drawing luminaries, is it kind of like Sphere Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on here. Like, the first thing with like enchanting objects and stuff like that. There are magic in Sphere and Skyjax in general is pretty freeform in that, you know, pretty much whatever you want magic to be able to do, it probably can. But I've broken it down into different sources of power that you can draw on. And the big ones that, like, this kind of feels to me, story is a core root of it. Yeah. If there is a story about an object, if you create a story about an object, there is a kind of magic in that. If you perform a ritual to enchant a knife, you are telling the story of that knife being a special knife, and therefore it has power. A lot of people, I think, in our audience have kind of mistakenly jumped to the conclusion that belief is the thing that makes this magical. Like, you could enchant a knife and have that knife, like, you know, you've performed the ritual on the knife, and the person who did that could die, so there's nobody left in the world to believe in that knife, but that knife would still have power, because that story was told about that knife at one point. Now, if it is a popular story about a knife, it's like a well-known thing in this town that there is a knife that can cut through stone, then that knife is probably going to be able to cut through stone. It is going to be more powerful. So don't think of it in terms of who's believing in the story. Think of it more in terms of what the story is and how powerful is that story. From there, I think CC can do a lot of those things. And kind of dovetailing with story is tradition, in that this is story that is held over time or reinforced over time. If somebody, you know, performs the ritual on this knife every year at a certain time of year, like there is just like a festival of our cool knife that cuts through rocks, then that knife is even, you know, stronger and more potent or whatever. So like creating rituals, creating traditions surrounding stories also play in on that magic. So there's that. But stepping into the luminaries, this is cool because this gives us a chance to figure out how someone starts learning how to interpret luminaries and like getting their own luminary deck.
Yes.
And my pitch, my basic pitch right off the bat, is that this should start with arts and crafts. I think in order to like start learning how to interpret luminaries and getting your own deck of luminaries, like, we have a tradition in the real world that a tarot deck only really works if it's gifted to you. I think a luminary deck works if you, it starts working if you make it. So I think CC needs to design the card back for her luminary deck. That's kind of what I think the first step is.
I agree.
And I think you probably get starter luminaries, like the person who's like kind of teaching you or mentoring you gives a luminary. You pick a luminary, and maybe we like go, there's a luminary from your hometown or whatever. Like, I feel like those three things go into the deck. And then as you go and travel around the world, you can collect new luminaries. If somebody gives you a luminary, you can shuffle it into your deck. And like when you're done shuffling, you'll look at your card backs and that luminary will be in there.
Mm.
Like, that is the idea that I had, because it allows CC to like go on a collecting quest, put a personal touch on this luminary, and learn things about different people around the world as she's like collecting these luminaries.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's very trading card, which is it a stretch to call that level of repetition and that that passion? Is there magic in that in terms of ritual? In terms of sitting down and having a very set way of creating the back of a luminary, a very methodical thing.
Yes, I definitely think so. I think, like, first of all, the idea of teaching someone how to use luminaries, of helping them make their deck of luminaries,
yeah,
like, that's a tradition, and people are doing that all over Sphere. So it means that when CC does it, even if she doesn't know anything about magic, even if she doesn't know anything about luminaries, there's still power in it, because all of these people around her are sharing in this same thing that she's being welcomed into.
So something dope that I just thought of is when I was a kid, when you would do travel soccer, you exchange patches with another team. Mm-hmm. So also in the idea that if CC travels and trades her luminaries with someone else's, her story then gets spread out and her tradition gets expanded to other places, and therefore would technically like spread it and increase its awareness and perhaps its effectiveness. I give that air quotes. You know what I mean? The idea of like, CC's mark, her brand of doing stuff of arts and crafts, or, you know, how she interprets luminaries would be therefore spreading. She'd be planting them seeds all over the world. If she,
would it be the trading of like a lumen for a lumen, like butcher for butcher? Or would it be like Cece has made a butcher card?
Yeah.
It's not really imbued with anything yet, but it is in her deck. And then to go and to pass that card on to another lumen lore person. And then is that what we're, yes or no?
I think part of that, because like there are definitely people like Travis Matico over on Skyjax Prime has a luminary deck, and he's been alive for 200 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's getting new luminaries. But I definitely think what could happen is that people who do practice like reading the luminaries might be able to tell each other stories about the luminaries. And when you get the story of a luminary, like you can use it or interpret it in a specific way. Like, you know, to a lot of people, Rusalka is like kind of a bummer of a card. It's like a really dangerous card because Rusalka is this force that lives in rivers and like tempts people in and drowns them. But like in specific, like the River Lilies, Margaret's like Black Lily chapter, as it were, they have a closer relationship to rivers and Rusalka in general. So they might be able to tell you a story about like, well, it's about, you know, justice for misdeeds or something like that. And then you go, oh, I've learned this thing. Maybe the art on the Rusalka luminary that you have changes in some way, like, you know, a greater awareness and understanding of the world, I think, should influence kind of your deck because it expands your ability to understand it. And I think a big part of that might just be an adult, you know, going down to this excitable child who's like just building out their deck going, yeah, here's the butcher. You're probably going to need to know about this because the world could be really dangerous sometimes. And if you can't interpret that danger from your luminary deck, you could be in trouble.
So a luminary deck, because tarot, not all of them are the same images on them. Is that same with lumens, where luminary cards?
So I think so.
Because that's something really interesting to me, because I've had tarot readings done and someone's like, if you see the bearer of the King of Wands is walking off into the distance, and that means that you're following a set path. Is there something there as well with, like, you know, if Cece were to literally draw these fucking things to her interpretation of the lumens, would that therefore mean different shit? Where like my experience with the Forest Queen was real bad.
Yeah.
So like my version of her would be this like wicked, twisted, you know, capturing like spider creature. And then that might, you know, create an interpretation, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? Like this kind of evolution of like a child's understanding of something established in the world is vastly different based on my understanding of it. Like if Cece hears about the river, it might be like, I don't know, otters. Like, you know, I had a great time in Otterbox, so it's not like this calamitous kind of like ruin.
I like that a lot, because I think what we're learning about luminary interpretations, you know, like in Sphere, they are more real than tarot in our world. But like, if you don't have the luminary in your deck or the right experience with the luminary in your deck, you might not be able to see what's going on for what it is.
Yes.
You know? Like, if I don't have the butcher in my deck and the butcher is at play, I might draw a luminary that is like referring to all the things around me that are not the butcher, but now I don't have that important warning, so danger is ahead without me.
Yeah.
And I also think learning about different aspects and interpretations of cards could play into that. And a thing that you might get out of that, or a way that we could indicate that, like, magically and sort of in the system is, you know, if Cece meets someone who is a little bit warmer and more connected to the Forest Queen, like the Bandari people or Marvale's people had a deal with the Forest Queen and it kind of worked out really well for them. So they might have a rosier picture. And if Luminary meets a Bandari like Luminary reader and gets that Forest Queen from them, like there's a chance that she could draw her dark, twisted Forest Queen or this kind of like a warmer Forest Queen.
That is what like is appealing to me, is because it plays nicely into the, you know, children experiencing a you know, a very dangerous world and learning and growing from the people who live in it. Like, they get the rare opportunity to travel, you know, these kids, and experience the world. So that's a fun thing. I'm wondering if, so say CC is all about imbuing it with magic, right? Mm-hmm. Is there something to that being in her, if all of her faith and energy and her, you know, her practice and her passion and her tradition is in a deck, is there something there, you know?
Does that have legs? Like, I'm picturing a very Yu-Gi-Oh-esque scene of, like, Cece pulling out her luminary deck and being like, I'm going to imbue this card with the power of the Union! Because that is a ritual. That is a spell. When Cece says that she is doing that and she knows that her luminary deck has power, she knows that she has power, and she knows that she can connect power to an object or something, like,
yeah,
that in and of itself is a spell. How those spells work, you know, kind of depends on Cece's technique and how she's rolling and whatnot, and how you and Drew are going to interpret those different things happening as Cece goes on her journey. Like, she might learn that, hey, this is a really dangerous thing because it allows the Forest Queen to touch my stuff.
Yes. Like, because I'd like to think of her whole bit is pushing it to the wheels fall off and is basically, for me, gambling. So I love, like I told Drew, I love the probability aspect of, like, the wheel of the lumens. Like, when you literally spin a wheel to see what happens when you go, I'll pull a lumen. It is literally banking on hope something good. And I kept thinking about, like, how it's literally pulling a top card off and hoping something happens. And I was like, what if it is, you know, is there something in the card itself is magical and it's effect that meets the literal manifestation of, you know, imbuing, of evoking a lumen's power? Do those meet in the middle and become something new-ish? Does it change it? These are the kinds of questions that I'm thinking about, where I know it's like there's a level of unpredictability with what's going to happen when you pull a lumen based mm-hmm. on lots of things. But I was like, what if literal a person's magic is crossed in there? What happens? You know, what is the effect if, you know, I believe that this card is literally magical, not the lumen itself, and also the lumen itself is magical, even if I don't want it to be? What happens? You know?
So there is a lot that goes into magic in Sphere. It's kind of like a big indiscernible pile. There's a zine that's in process right now that's explaining the magic of Sphere a little bit more specifically because people have wondered about it. But essentially, the thing that I really want to communicate through it is there isn't exactly a right or clear answer. There are a lot of different forces that might touch a spell that Cece casts. You know, like we learned about sacrifice a little bit in season one of Courier's Call. Like, if Cece incorporates a sacrifice into one of the spells she casts, like, that also affects it. The more thoroughly plotted out the story of your spells are, like, the stronger it will be and the more in your control it is. If you just pull, a luminary, that is a force that has way more power than you, you know, and you're just being like, hey, go wild, which means that a lot of things can happen that maybe you don't actually intend because the luminary is like the being with the most intent at the table. But if Cece puts together a ritual that involves a luminary, that involves a sacrifice, that involves a story that she is telling, that is part of a tradition she has been taught, that involves like her friends, so love and labor are tied up into it. If she's offering like, animal parts or like a lock of hair or, you know, all these other things, like there are different aspects that she can tie to a spell to make the spell more concrete, more potent, and more within her control.
Cool. So like the more I stack, basically, the more of the forms of magic or sources of magic that are applied, the more in control and potent it is.
Yeah, exactly.
In a very rough way of saying
it. In a super rough way of saying. And like, yes. You know, you might not always know what's going on when you cast a spell. There are forces that you can't see. You know, if you cast it in a particular location, if you cast a spell in Thornvale to grow some food, it's probably going to work better because Thornvale has like this really bountiful region that is always producing like great things. If you cast that in a desert, like the fact that you're in the desert might have an effect on that.
Okay. Okay. Cool. That. Okay. Because we talked about like we were plotting out like what CC can do now that we're in the new system. And I can talk about this, right?
Sure, go for it.
I didn't know if it was that. And the phrase like that we use is magic makes it so, like, is kind of CC's, like, what I would, what are the assets?
The distinctions. Yeah.
Distinctions. The distinction is magic makes it so, where it's like CC's belief in herself and this magic can make, I'm assuming, small things happen. But if she learned about things like the discipline or the practice involved with story, sacrifice, tradition, like all these cool things, I assume that they would be more under her control and more akin to like what, you know, tabletop magic is.
Yeah. Okay. I think the amount of CC's like personal energy and you know, will that she's putting into the different things she does, like if she's trying to get at magic, she's probably going to find it at some way. The thing that will affect it and hope CC will be honing, I think, as a practitioner of magic is really how she's manipulating those forces. Because if CC says, you know, I will see the right path through these woods because I'm CC, I'm awesome, we're a squad, let's roll out, like, that's good. That will do something. Yeah. But if CC goes, I will see a way through these woods because I am the granddaughter of the greatest explorer who ever lived. It's a part of me. It's who I am and it's who I want to be. All of a sudden, like, it's a much more focused story. And cool. The magic of Sphere has her back harder.
See, focus is a great word because it's like there's a refinement to the practice of magic that is very sexy and appealing to me. Where it's like, it can just be like, you know, the cliche of like, you nick your thumb with a knife and you're like, sacrifice magic, go. But it's so much like that would be like a dull, unrefined way of doing it rather than like, maybe, you know, this locket meant so much to me. It was given to me by my late father. Smashing it or burning it and then doing something would create an even larger controllable effect.
Exactly. And that's what's cool about this being CC's story is there is a fastidiousness, a discipline to it. CC has like all of this energy, which is rad and going to work for her, but only carry her so far.
Yes. Where it's like, I'd like it to become something where like you grow up, you're a rambunctious shit. And like, you know, you think that you don't have to listen to your authority figures, but they actually know more than you do. And it's okay to listen to them. So that's kind of where I want to lead with this like discipline thing happening where like she learns that structure isn't the worst thing. And that if you want to cast cool magic, like the reason Ruby can control magic is because she learned how to, or like she knows the tradition involved in it. She's not just winging it. She's not like, you know, banking on the Forest Queen, letting her friends go by yelling at her. Like, you know, that kind of thing is what is very appealing to me. So her kind of calming down and understanding that, like, the source of magic was essentially friendship, but also these other things. Also refining those things into a laser beam is what makes CC do the thing she wants to do, you know.
Cool. That is f***ing rad. I want to pull Drew in now.
Yeah, yes.
Drew, you are responsible for, you know, running some NPCs who are going to be trying to teach CC these things. I am curious because, like, I think by the time season 2 starts, she's got a little bit of training, right?
Yeah. If it's anybody, it's going to be Winchwind.
Yes.
Star Watcher Winchwind is, we didn't see a whole lot of them in season 1, mostly because there's no reason to at that point. But we see a little bit of them in the Jolly Jack episodes, where they come with Captain Dennison to pick up the kids, and they do this really cool, like, see if Jack is lying by drawing luminaries every time to see, like, what luminary to just pick up the ambient bullshittery of Jack and see how the lumens deal with that in that moment. And I had that moment kind of coming up with that as we were doing it, and I was like, that's very, very cool. You know, I guess Star Watch lumen people who like know lumen lore can do. They can get very simple yes or no's of what's going on in stuff. But if it's anybody who's going to be teaching CC, it's going to be Winch Wind, who's sitting down with CC and like teaching her about the lumens and about the deck. And, you know, having craft hour with Star Watcher Winchwind, where they sit down and they're like, yeah, don't use circles with this particular lumen. Like, it has to be angles. It has to be angles of 45 to 90. It can't be circles as you draw stuff. Like the little details in that, like having it be that focused in like saying, We're going to draw the bounty today, and we're going to learn all the particular shapes and symbols that go with the bounty. These are the ones you can use for this card when you're drawing this card. And I'm sure that there are like, I would say that there's like a handful of symbols and various things that like each lumen has a connection with. Maybe, possibly, I don't know. I was doing recently, I was creating the insignias for the Swiftville Courier Service. I was going through and like figuring out, and I spent 2 hours going through like the language of flowers and like what they mean.
That's
true. And like how this goes. And like, I found a flower that's called a speedwell. And I was like, that's the flower.
Speedwell, you said?
A speedwell. So I'm like, yeah, that's. That is the that's the flower for the courier service.
They're really pretty.
They're very pretty.
They are conical. They are indigo or purple. They are sexy.
Yeah, I was like, this. It's going to be this, and but also I was like, and that means this, and then this flower means this flower, and if you mix the two together, they mean this. And I thought about it, and I was like, oh, I know that like in alchemy, certain shapes mean certain things. And I can imagine that people who make their own luminaries are like in the margins of it. They're like, we're going to put these symbols because I know this luminary likes these symbols.
Yeah. And like that is a very personal thing. Like you're trying to inject who you are into your own luminary deck because like I think it will make it easier to interpret certain things. And like you're also trying to inject that into the back of your deck, like the card backs of your deck are the most personal thing like to you, because that represents everything. And like I think there is kind of a magic where as you grow and change, you can change the back of your deck and like reshuffle your deck, and it will all have like that change there lined up for you and cool stuff like that.
Oh man, I love this. I love that imagery of people of lumen, people who are like really into the lumen decks, who are like, yeah, you shuffle it this way, you see this shuffle, this really cool shuffle.
Oh,
here.
True.
And now like this shuffle will do this thing, and this shuffle will do this thing, and this shuffle will do this, and as you can see now, all the backs of my cards are different. And it's like sleight of hand magic, but it's real.
You know, yeah. And it makes me think of people have a certain superstition with how things are shuffled because they've been doing it a certain way their entire time with lumens. Like, no. Because what my understanding is, if I'm being mentored, am I then taking Star Watcher Winchwinds like that? That's how they interpret this stuff? Or is it just there's one way, you know, or am I going to be a disciple of Star Watcher Winchwind?
No, I was about to say, one of the things with Sphere that I want to like really emphasize is because we're trying to be anti-colonialist about this is that there aren't concrete answers for things.
Cool.
That Winchwind will teach you like what they know, but the more CC goes off and learns new things, like the more her deck becomes her deck and
sick.
Her understanding and learning from other people will round that understanding out and help But like, you know, Winchwind's style is going to be best for Winchwind, but you also need to start somewhere.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. That is very exciting. This is the Master Roshi moment where, like, you know, I'm going to have a lot of experiences, but I'm going to learn my, you know, I learned my alphabet here. That's what's exciting to me. This is dope. But my point was, because you would learn, like you said, there's people who are like, they're Lumen nerds, basically, or people who like live by this, study this. They would have their own traditions associated with like the delicacy of drawing one, a certain technique for literally flipping a card, little idiosyncrasies like that. Like people who are passionate about cards and sleight of hand have very, very specific ways of doing things. And just tiny details like that are very appealing to me, of learning how people draw them, where people keep them, the carrying cases, the designs on the back. Some people think it means something. Some people might be like, no, it's like, you know, customize it to your own. And some people would think that, you know, there's a dampening effect to correct art, perhaps. You know, I'm very excited because I like the idea of this magic associated linked with cards, because there's something so deeply personal about everybody. Like, I have a favorite deck of playing cards, and these things, like, you know, like you said, Travis has a 200-year-old deck, you know, potentially. That is intimate. And that is what is very appealing to me about this whole thing, is everybody has their own binder full of Pokemon cards, you know, that are deeply meaningful to them, that can call upon supernatural forces. Like, what a concept. It's amazing. I'm just excited. I'm very excited.
I love it. I love nothing. I love more than our world building being described as a binder full of deeply meaningful Pokemon cards. Because what binder of Pokemon cards isn't deeply meaningful?
Truly.
They're all your best friend.
You know, you know, there's a guy out there who's like into Lumen lore who has his binder full of like, have you seen all my limited edition Forest Queens?
Could you, like, could you imagine being in this world though, where like the, cause I think about, if I were to hold this, the weight of these things in my hand, is that's literally heavy. There's like a weight to it, and a personal weight of responsibility of like, if I with these, you know, they could change my world. They could disrupt my order. That is something that's like, to learn how to be better about that is a fascinating thing to me. And it's like, it's such a deeply personal thing for CC to say like, I want this terrifying force. I want to know more about it and why it's been, you know, why we may have had some bad luck, I want to know more about it. And why we might have had good luck, I want to know more about the forces that are granting me these things. It's such a, it's a weighty kind of lore study, I think, in Sphere, that is very sexy to me. The idea of, it's not fortune telling to me, it's like respect for this, you know, otherworldly force. That is, it reminds me of like people who are actually meteorologists. They're like, because I can save lives. If people I know when a hurricane is coming or when things are coming, you can help people, you know. It's very sexy. This is all very good.
Well, that brings us back, I think, to Star Watching in CC. Star Watching, like this Luminary stuff, I see as very up CC's alley. Like Star Watching is a thing that I would love to see CC learn, because it is very counter to her personality right now. In that the way it works, you chart the positions of different stars. You make a note of that and other conditions of like where you are in the world, what the weather is like, what the time is, all these different things. And you run those through algorithms. You essentially make mathematical calculations with them, and they produce a result that you can use to like guide your interpretation of what forces in the world are at play and whatnot. So CC would have to learn like how to chart the position of a star with a sextant and note that down, and then take a temperature, use a pocket watch, get the more information that you gather in your star watching, the more nuanced your results can be. That can be the difference between telling like, oh, I'm within a couple miles of this area to I am exactly here, or oh, it looks like we might be shifting to winter soon to there is going to be a storm wind that blows in on Tuesday and we really need to watch out for that. based on CC's reaction to like learning all this job, like in season one, I think this might be a very frustrating thing for her to have to deal with at first.
And what is cool about this, like the two things that we're talking about, this like very discipline, this like magic stuff, is I don't know what I want CC to be yet, because part of me goes like, what if she leans into magic and wizardry and controlling the forces and blah, blah, blah. But the other one that's very appealing to me is her becoming a leader and a captain and someone who learns the disciplines of star watching and focuses more on like things that are within her own control instead of gods and magic and things like these forces. Instead of being like, no, we can do like I can use math and my own brain to keep people safe and to get us from point A to point B. That idea of real life applications of like, you know, science is magic, but it's also like math and computation and understanding, that is also appealing to me for what path I want her to go down, is like becoming a star watcher, becoming a captain, is by learning how to pilot a ship, not using magic, learning math, learning the weather, learning star watching. Like, that's also appealing to me too, but I cannot choose. And I don't know, because I'm like, oh, it'd be so sexy if she's like this now, because she has a magic map. She likes, like, you know, this navig. That to me is also very appealing. That was my initial thought with this character, is like, you know, the great, like she would go down as the greatest skyship captain that has ever walked the face of Sphere. And she did it using her own two f***ing hands, not magic and nonsense.
I mean, you know? that is cool. And one of the things, like, CC is 14, 15. I don't think she has to know. And no. Like, I kind of think Winchwind gets that, which is probably why Winchwind is also putting, you know, star watching in front of CC. It's like, hey, I know you don't love doing this, learning this. And I know that I probably don't even love teaching you, because you're probably complaining a lot. But there is a chance that you'll get something out of this. So we're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Mr. Miyagi thing. It's putting the hard work in front of you to like build that muscle and that focus so you can use it later. I mean, it's super interesting.
It is. And it's I feel like it's like you must choose, because I do want, like, for the behind the scenes content, I do want there to be difficult choices where CC does not know what she wants to be, honestly, or like who she wants to be. She just knows that she wants to stay with the team and develop things that she likes doing and learn like how to be the person she wants to be. And whether it's magic or, you know, navigation or being a captain or, you know, something completely different, that is something that I want to lean into, is this idea of like, you don't have to know at 15 years old what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm it's okay super, to dabble.
Yeah. I'm super interested for CC to meet Mulden, Foxskull, Captain Foxskull. Because Captain Foxskull was a star watcher and became a captain.
Okay.
I'm super interested. I mean, also, he's just weird. So it's going to be super interesting to see. I'm curious, Aaron.
Yeah.
What cards do you think CC has at this point?
Oh, God. I don't know if she has any. Like, is it something that, like, literally everyone has these things? Because, like, we're pod kids. Like, I'm trying to really lean into that they're, like, sort of privileged little pod children who are like, what's violence? You know, like,
I think there are plenty of people who don't with luminaries at all, who like carry a deck. Like, maybe they'll see a luminary sayer or something like that, but like, there are definitely people who are like, that's not for me, I don't care.
Like, I think she thinks they're cool and is like, you know, it's magical, and so of course she's obsessed and things like that, but I don't know if she has them. And if she did, I feel like her, I always thought of her having some kind of vendetta against water stuff, just because like it sucks, like, you know, that sucks that you can't there's a part of the world that's like forbidden and dangerous. But I mean, like, if she did, that would be her obsession, is like anything involving water mariner stuff, because it's just like this, you know, this wound on the world that limits everyone from doing what they want to do, kind of. And that would piss off like a little bratty child who is like, what do you mean I can't go in the water? What? I gotta fly across it? That's bullshit. That's my first thought. But also, it's like, I don't know if she'd have them. Like, do people in Thornvale, like I know, I'm sure they do, but like, do a lot of people have these things and do that kind of stuff? It seems like such a nice place.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, the game Illimat is everywhere. So yes. Everyone has at least knowledge of the luminaries as it comes to Illimat. When it comes, I mean, there are some very potent luminaries that deal with Thornvale specifically.
Yes.
And so I think that particular one is like the imagery of that, of like the bounty, which is the one for Thornvale, is everywhere in Thornvale.
Okay.
But
would I know that though? Like, do the kids know that kind of stuff?
That's the thing. I mean, I think that has to come out in you asking questions.
Cool.
Of Winchwind and stuff like that. I mean, we could literally sit down and do a scene where, you know, we have a moment with you and Winchwind.
Because what you're saying is very interesting to me, because it's the kids don't have an understanding of the world they live in at all. Like, yes, we have fun winks at that of like new locations. Teehee. What's violence? The joke. But it's like the idea of, I don't even know what the fuck the lumens really are, you know, but I've been living in the bounty my entire life with like, you know, magical safety all around me. And so that is cool. Learning like, is like, that's why I get to wear, is it sweater weather all year round? I thought I was just lucky. You know, that kind of like learning that grandpa has money kind of thing. We're like, what? He does? Is that why my house is bigger than David's? Like, you know, that's how I think of the kids, though, is like that kind of sweet innocence, but with supernatural forces that have kept them in the dark about horrors of the world, you know, and that would be kind of this guilt trip for me personally. I think for Cece as well. It's like, what's a Leviathan? What? You know? So.
Well, I think at this point, I think at the very least, Cece probably has seen Winchwind's deck. Winchwind has used their deck in training and in like learning things and just teaching Cece about them. Whether or not you have gotten a deck from Winchwind is, I think, up to you. Like,
TBD. I think we can, like, that'll be something. Yes. I think yes. Do you get like a training deck? Like, you, everybody gets their own, like, you know, you get your first.
I think what it might be is that Cece gets a couple cards. Like, I think giving Cece like three cards to start with.
Let's draw them now. Like,
I mean, I can go get the luminaries.
Do it. Let's do it. Let's.
Oh, snap.
Let's see what cards Cece has.
What is my starter deck? What is my, what's the first card Yugi gets? What's the first card Yugi receives?
That's gotta be Black Magician, right?
Is it? I don't know. I don't know Yu-Gi-Oh. Like, Yugi and Kaiba's first duel. Yeah, it's gotta be Dark Magician and,
Dark Magician. That's it. Not Black Magician. Whatever.
Oh, no. I didn't know I corrected you. I'm reading a Wikipedia page. That's why. I have blue. Oh, it's gotta be pieces, random chunk of Exodia. No, but that's the lumen. Everybody, the lumen that I pulled, ready? It's Exodia, the full
Exodia!
In blue eyes, white dragon.
I've got the Black Lotus. So yeah, I completely imagine that if you have certain cards, it's Winchwind going from like, because I think we were talking about earlier about how you can have different versions of the same card.
Yes.
And so it's probably three cards from Winchwind's full deck that Winchwind doesn't need anymore. They've outgrown it.
I'm trying to decide how many cards it should be too, because like a lot of luminary reads are kind of like compass based, so you've got like four directions or whatnot.
So probably five then.
Yeah, and I'd also kind of want like Cece to pick one, to like have one that she gets because she wants. Like,
Let's have that be that. That's the fifth one. That's the one that, like, you, Aaron, get to choose. Cece has one card.
Okay.
That is the one that like she asked for that card.
Okay.
And that's, Winchwind was like, you get to choose one card. It's your card. I'll give you that card.
Okay. Okay. Can we draw first and then I'll tell you what mine is?
Yeah. I've got a bunch of cards just kind of like laid out here. Are you feeling cards kind of up at the top, close to the bottom row?
I'm going to go right on the top. I trust the heart of the cards.
Okay. So going to the top here.
Yep.
Just first card in sequence?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. First card in sequence is the island.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's go.
Which I really like how this plays into CC's I want the water. I want that because the island is the dirtiest, nastiest card out there, and it represents the hateful sea. It represents misfortune and being stuck and whatnot. It is a cool thing to have in CC's deck.
So you got to trust in the heart of the cards, kids. You hear that?
Can I ask, Aaron?
Yes.
What does the card look like? It's the island, and James just said what it means. Mm-hmm. So what is the picture of it
on Star Watcher Winchwind's deck?
This is given this to you.
Okay. So it is this storm, a stormy gray sky, and a very small, phone booth sized piece of land, and a shadowed figure, you can't really make them out, hugging their knees on the island as this storm approaches the tiny piece of land.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. All right, Aaron, where are we going next? We go in top row, we go in middle row, bottom row.
All top all day.
Should I just pull the next in the sequence?
Yes, please. Gotta trust in the heart.
Ooh. This is a card that I have literally just written a definition for a couple weeks ago. So now I have to look it up. And it is... No, I don't want that one. I want Luminaries. The Skyjack.
Oh.
Adventure, courage,
what?
And travel.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, dude.
Oh my, you gotta believe in the heart of the cards.
You got it. One needs must believe in the heart of the cards.
I think that's a phrase Winchwind tells you all the time.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Love that there will be no legal consequences for that
not
whatsoever.
At all.
Winchwind said one needs must believe in the heart of the
there
cards.
It is. And we will totally, when this deck is printed one day of CC's cards, they will totally say one must certainly, definitely, absolutely believe in the V with two E's, heart of the cards.
Aaron, what does the picture on the card look like?
The Skyjack is the picture of someone's back in what's the pirate coat called? It has a name. That style.
An oilskin or dust.
Yeah, just a long pirate, basically a sky pirate outfit. Think of it what you may. Their back and in front of them is just open sky and clouds, and they're standing on the edge of the bow of the ship. Mm-hmm. Just right on the edge. If one inch more and they fall off.
Yeah.
But open sky before them.
That's cool. All right. Third card in the sequence. I'm pulling it. Oh, the boat.
Gotta believe.
Cool.
One needs must believe. Yes.
Wow. The boat represents opportunity, freedom, and labor.
Trying to make this one good. The boat. It is. I know there's a. So I want it to be a knot, but the knot. Is there a knot that defies a mariner's knot? You know, that's a big middle finger.
So here's the thing. I personally don't know much about knot work. Mm-hmm. And I did kind of unilaterally decide that there are knots that are taboo in our world because they are mariner's knots versus Aaroner's knots. Because I don't know about knots, I need to bring on a knot expert and historical knot expert to talk through okay, here are knots. These are basic knots. and here are knots that can have variations. I think you use a bowline knot to like save people from the water. Like that's good. But I actually can't remember. I know that that's one of those knots that like pulls taut. So
either way, can you read me the meaning of it again?
It is freedom, opportunity, and labor.
Yeah, it's definitely like on the sides of the card. Like it's basically a knot that runs across the card, and in the middle is a very simple knot. That's it.
Cool.
This is a plain one. Yeah.
All right. Fourth one. Just going in sequence.
Please.
It is. Oh, this is an interesting one. The Echo.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. The Echo is deja vu, illusions, and repetition. And I'll just read this because it's a little bit headier than some of the others. The Echo is a phenomenon that happens all over Sphere, though it occurs more frequently in some places than others. People experience memories of moments they are currently living or see shades of past and future events. Some see the Echo as a blessing to make peace with one's past, an opportunity to gain advantage by glimpsing what's to come, or a burden of haunting phantoms.
Okay. So the image of the Echo is a small singing bird in a cave. Like a that kind of thing. I'm thinking of it as Echo of literally like a cave.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, cool.
All right. So those are the luminaries that that were drawn.
Okay.
Now I guess we need the fifth luminary, the core luminary.
It is the one... maelstrom.
Cece goes hard.
She does not. She goes hard or she goes the f*** back to Thornvale.
The maelstrom to remind everyone. Chaos, change, and storm.
Great. I pick the maelstrom. She picked the maelstrom because of the chaos thing. I know that.
Just like the chaos emeralds from my favorite comic.
Exactly. So on the front is Sonic taking his shoes off.
Okay.
No.
It's a blue hedgehog in shoes. No. He's taking off those shoes.
The maelstrom. Oh, it's like an artist's interpretation of like the event horizon of a black hole.
Oh,
whatever that is. You know, put it into Google Images. It's cool stuff.
It's that distorted bit of light where like light is across the middle and then it kind of does that bell curve.
And there's that like half circle part of the black hole surrounded by like a swirl.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's basically like a black hole.
The story of that? Do you know the story of that image?
No.
They created that for Interstellar. For the what happened was Interstellar was like, we don't know what it would look like to do a black hole. So they asked like an artist and like a scientist, and they got together and they like, this is what it would look like, and it actually answered questions that physicists had. They were
it.
Like, oh, that actually makes, now seeing it, that makes sense. It's a very interesting story. You should look it up.
Let's get that Hollywood money in the space program.
I'm saying.
That's cool. I think one of my favorite aspects of that is who the fuck on Sphere drew this.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a robust astronomer heavy setting. That they just know about black holes, so like it is cool.
Yeah,
so,
like somebody knew. Somebody knows about somebody.
Drew, am I wrong, or that there are on the back of our Audrin coats are sketches of things? Correct? Aren't there designs?
Yeah, there are. Yours has constellations.
Oh, I didn't. I thought I don't remember if they were lumens or something.
There are stars on
that's
the back
right.
of your
that's
coat.
That's right.
Okay. On June's, it's like battle, and Kieran on the inside has that drowned sailor face.
Yes, that's right. I was trying to remember. I was trying to bridge the two, but can't remember.
Well, that's cool. So that's
starter deck, and it's horrifying.
I mean, you've got enough that is like definitely cool stuff on your side and like enough that is bad and scary. Yeah.
Perfect. That's what I want, though, is to the feeling of unpredictability, chaos, and fear. Want it.
So, James, what would be the next step for CC? CC now has these five cards. What would be their next step to, like, grow the deck?
I think, like, that's literally the thing is learning about the world, right? Like, you have to go out. You have to talk to other people with Luminary decks. You have to collect stories about the Luminaries. The more stories you know about the Luminaries, the more like diverse and specific like a reading you can get out of your deck. Like, I am sure there is some like Forest Queen devotee somewhere that has a Luminary deck that is just the Forest Queen. There are just different depictions of the Forest Queen, and they know the Luminary so well that they can interpret just about anything just by understanding these differences in the Forest Queen. So, I think CC's just got to learn about the world and other people and different perspectives and grow their deck by appreciating and learning from other people.
Got to go play Illimat.
Go play a lot of Illimat.
And you got to play Illimat, man.
Sick. I love this. I'm very excited. Season 2 just got a lot more exciting for me, to be honest. I mean, I was excited, but now I'm like fucking vibrating with like, must learn magic, must learn all I can.
Well, and I certainly hope that it's also gotten very exciting for everyone who's listening. Literally don't know where this discussion is airing, but I'm pretty sure it's airing before... we finished the Kickstarter for season 2, but I hope this has you pumped kind of about the magic of Sphere, certainly about CC and where her story's going, and Courier's Call season 2.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.
Singing way, hey, ho. And I've seen the destruction their tempers can bring. Singing way, hey, ho. I've ridden the winds over mountain and plain. Singing way, hey, ho. Just to circle the coast and curse the mariner's name. Singing way, hey, ho. My father, he told me to never deceive. Be a voice to the hopeless and help those in need. And to ever be thankful for what you've received. Sing it way, hey, ho. Sing it way.